On Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs will come to order. Good morning, committee, on this bright, sunny, nice spring day, we'll call it. You may notice on your agenda we had a work session scheduled for House Bill 2389, which we've already heard. That bill doesn't have amendments drafted yet, and so we're not going to be able to work on that one today. So I'm going to go to the next bill, which is House Bill 2623, and open the public hearing and have Megan read the summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2623 modifies the amount of deposits required or permitted under the insurance code for a Class 1 rated corporation. You'll see a dash 1 amendment attached in your packet, which changes that amount from the $10 million in the new language in the bill to $50 million, as well as inserts language that says the director may adopt the rules to require periodic review of the secured obligations of the corporation allowed under this chapter. Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to call forward Sean Miller and Jim McKittrick of Liberty Northwest.
Representative Gallegos, did you want to present on the bill?
No.
You can.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Sean Miller, I represent Liberty Northwest Companies. We are here in support of House Bill 2623, and as Megan indicated, the dash 1 amendments that are before you. To my right is Jim McKittrick, the Chief Financial Officer of Liberty Northwest, to explain the bill and the change. This particular bill and the amendment is something that we have worked with the insurance division to come up with this, the dash 1 amendment prior to session, and that they have signed off. I know Russell Latham is in the audience today, who regulates the financial end of the securities. And so at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. McKittrick to explain the bill.
Chair Close, members of the committee. My name is Jim McKittrick. I'm an Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer of Liberty Northwest Insurance Corporation. I'm a resident of Portland, Oregon, and we are proposing that there be a slight modification to the current Oregon revised statutes that call for deposits in excess of $100 million be allowed to be invested in high-grade corporate bonds. Liberty Northwest currently has about $260 million on deposit for workers' compensation insurance, and these monies are meant to be provided to be deposits for the coverage of Oregon workers' compensation claimants. We are proposing in an effort to allow more flexibility in investing in managing our investment portfolio that the $100 million threshold be reduced to $50 million. Right now, the law requires that there be deposits invested in the form of cash, surety bonds, U.S. government securities, obligations of a state or territory's possessions thereof, and only in the instance where a deposit is required in excess of $100 million would there be allowed high-grade corporate bonds be used as deposit securities. We are proposing that that $100 million be reduced to $50 million. We would retain the high-grade quality definition that's currently used by the statute. That current requirement calls for a bond that is rated by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners as designated as a number one bond be retained, and also provide for a periodic review of the quality of the deposits so that in the instance that a high-grade corporate bond was downgraded, there could then be a substitution for an alternative high-grade deposit. Liberty Northwest is a private insurance carrier, as you probably know. This requirement is peculiar to private insurance carriers. Public insurers, such as the Safe Corporation, are not subject to this requirement at all. So in today's environment, I think it's fair to say that a number of the securities that are allowed for the investments below $100 million are of less quality than a high-grade corporate bond. For instance, some of the municipalities that are currently allowed probably are not of the same quality as some of the high-grade corporates that would be allowed only in excess of $100 million. So in my mind, really, this doesn't alter the quality of the deposits, but yet would provide some additional flexibility for managing the portfolio.
Questions? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. The first thing that caught my attention was this incredible drop from $100 million to $10 million. And then if you didn't need $100 million, if you go down to $10 million, why not just take it all the way down to zero? Because I didn't see the distinction there, but keeping $10 million, if it wasn't needed, if we could get rid of the $190 million, why not just get rid of all of it? Now we're jumping back up to $50. Can you just explain to me why we even require anything? What happens if it's not there at all? And why do we need this? If we can lower it so drastically, why do we need it at all? And if we don't need it at if you don't think $10 million is enough, why is $50 million enough? I'm a layman, so you're going to have to bear with me on this.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, we originally had talked about the threshold being lowered from $100 million to $10 million. I guess to answer your first question, why are there any deposits required at all, that point is probably argumentative in terms of whether there should be any requirement at all. I think in the instance where an insurer becomes insolvent, it becomes the responsibility of the state to manage the affairs and wind down the insurance company to the point where the claimants are paid, and having depository requirements eases that burden. It makes it easier to secure the assets necessary to liquidate to pay claimants. And it's purely a means by which greater ease can be introduced into that process. In terms of why not reduce it altogether or reduce it down to $10 million from $100 million, we would suggest that that would be appropriate. I think to find middle of road to compromise, $50 million was an agreed upon number with the insurance division. I think there are a number of insurers where there are fairly limited capital requirements in order for them to write insurance, to write workers' compensation insurance, and many of the carriers that do write workers' compensation insurance are very thinly capitalized. The risk of insolvency is perhaps significantly greater with these small insurers. These small insurers might have only $2 million or $3 million or $6 million of monies that are required for deposits. And in that instance, insurance division is comfortable that those securities be in highly liquid corporate or highly liquid U.S. government bonds. I think for a carrier such as Liberty Northwest, where we already have, $50 million on deposit, that isn't an issue.
I do have one more.
Follow up,
please. I think since what happened, in light of what happened in New York, on September 11th, I think the risk of insolvency for any insurance company has probably become greater and more likely. Let's say some, like you folks, you have $100 million in there now and you want to drop it down to $50 million. Am I reading that correct?
We have $260 million in there now, and anything above $100 million is permissible to be invested in corporates, and we're suggesting that the threshold be lowered to $50
million. Will that lower your ability or make any less likely your ability to pay off claims in case some incredible, drastic, catastrophic thing happens? That's all I'm really worried about.
And the answer to that is no. The deposits requirements themselves would not be altered by this. There would still be monies deposited. The question is one of which... in what kind of instruments would the monies be invested in? And it's purely a type of investment as opposed to the amount of the investment that's at issue.
Thank you.
Representative Girard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember when we went through a lot of this in the last session that we learned that there are long-term accrued obligations which are, keep rolling on month to month, year to year, and there are also then the short-term obligations. Are you, as a public entity, permitted to share any of that information with us as to whether that $50 million is impacted at all by the amount of the accrued debt that it continues on an annual basis?
Madam Chair, Representative Girard, the duration of the investment would not be altered by this change in the bill. There are maturities up to 30 or more years with U.S. government bonds. There are maturities of certainly more than 30 years for corporate bonds. The duration of the portfolio is managed in such a way that the maturities coincide with the estimated timing of claim obligations becoming due and would not in any way be altered by the modifications proposed in this bill.
Thank you very much.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Seeing no one else signed up to testify on this bill, I'm going to close the work session, the public hearing on House Bill 2623. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2623. Let's discuss the Dash 1 amendment. Megan, you want to read it for us?
Well, again, the Dash 1 amendments is what put the $50 million in versus the $10 million, which is down from the original $100
million. Okay, and the director adopting the rules.
Correct.
I'm saying, Kitts.
Madam Chair, I would move that we move to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Oh, I'm sorry. Move that we accept the Dash 1 amendment.
Representative Kitts has moved the Dash 1 amendment into House Bill 2623. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? The answer ordered. Representative Kitts.
Madam Chair, I would move that we move, was it 2623, mm-hmm. to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts has moved House Bill 2623 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Merkley?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Kitts?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Excused.
Chair Close?
Votes aye. Excuse me. Motion carries, and House Bill 2623 goes to the floor. Representative Gallegos, would you carry this
sure.
bill?
Sure.
Okay. Closing the work session on House Bill 2623. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2447 and ask our staff to read the summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2447 requires certain building code professionals to wear visible identification when they are providing their professional services. Thank you.
I'd like to call John Endicott to testify. Oh, local 290. Welcome.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I'm John Endicott. I'm the business manager of Plumbers and Steam Fitters Local 290. We represent 4,200 plumbers and pipe fitters in the state of Oregon. In the thought of this bill, we've had a very large problem with compliance and unlicensed people doing licensed plumbing and electrical and boiler work in the state. And we thought for the security of the citizens that the state now issues a license to electricians, plumbers, and boiler pressure vessel folks that has their photo on it. And that's a real nice thing they came out with a few years ago. And we thought simply by requiring those licensed individuals to wear those IDs, that if Mrs. Jones calls and needs a hot water heater replaced, that she knows when the individual shows up, if he's not wearing a visible, valid license, that she shouldn't let him do the work. And whether it's electrical, plumbing, or boiler work. We've talked with the state, and we don't see where it's going to have any fiscal impact. They already provide the photo ID licenses to the licensees, and it would just be a way of having people that are out doing that license work be a little more visible. and let people know that the folks that are doing that work on their home are licensed through the state of Oregon.
Thank you, John. I had one question about the bill on page 4, and it's in section 10, subsection 11. My brother-in-law works on large boilers, and I was just wondering, this says that they would wear the ID when they're installing, repairing, or altering a boiler or pressure vessel. Do you think, is it possible to have ID that, you know, I'm worried about safety type of issues, things getting caught up?
If you went to large job sites around the state, Intel would be a wonderful example. To work on that job site, you have to have photo ID for Intel for security reasons, and they're either clip-on or on a lanyard, and the lanyards are OSHA-approved. They have a Velcro tear-away in the back. It's something that if you got your neck, the license would simply come off. So there's thousands of licensed craft workers daily working with ID on today, just because of the requirement of the customer for their security.
Okay. Representative Gerard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How much? Who's going to pay for this?
Well, the state already provides the photo ID, so we would leave it up to the individual or the organization that represents those individuals to provide them with a lanyard or a clip to put on their license. Or the individual can go get one. So I don't see any impact. That's one of the first things that we looked at when we looked at this bill. Seeing as the state already provides that license with a photo on it. It looks almost like a driver's license.
Follow-up. How serious is the problem of misrepresentation?
We have found time after time unlicensed folks doing licensed work, whether it be electrical, plumbing, or boiler work. We have a difficult time getting compliance on that, and we feel that this will be an easier way for maybe even folks on a job site to monitor. If somebody's doing some work, it would be very easy to see if they're licensed and qualified to do that work instead of having unlicensed people do it.
Couldn't they just carry it in their wallet and show it to them?
Well, that's another difficulty. If I went up to somebody on a job and I saw them doing some wiring and I said, hey, are you licensed? Can you show me your license? They simply would say, I don't have to show you anything. If I could walk by and see that they visibly had a license on, I would know whether they were licensed to do that work or not. If they were not, then I could call an inspector or an agency to come out and find out why somebody's not having a license doing that license work.
Thank you.
Representative Kitts.
It's kind of a two-part question. Number one, if I hire somebody, and I recently had to hire plumbers and electricians and contractors, as the consumer, isn't it my obligation to find out, you know, what they're, you know, make sure that they have the CCB or whatever the certifications are? I say that, number one. And number two, if by requiring an ID badge on a lanyard, if I haven't taken enough time to find out about the person that I've hired, do you think that I'm going to take the time to go and check a lanyard?
Well, I would say, and not in every instance, if somebody calls, looks in the yellow pages and has an individual out and doesn't want to follow up on whether they're licensed, they probably wouldn't. But I think this would give us a better opportunity to have compliance and a better opportunity for folks to see that the proper people are doing the proper jobs.
Representative Shoffler.
Now, I had the opportunity to work at Hoffman, at Intel for a few months while working for Hoffman, but we didn't have IDs then. But I support this. Isn't this just an example of another industry trying to police itself?
You bet. The more we can do to help ourselves, and the better off we are. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming rampant, the unlicensed folks out doing licensed work.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ken Carlson.
Good morning. Well, I'm Ken Carlson. I'm the Chief Plumbing Inspector for the City of Portland. I'm also on the Oregon State Plumbing Board, also on the Tri-County Plumbing Code Forum, and I'm the Chairman of the Oregon Cascade Chapter of the International Association of Plumbing and Mechanical Officials, and I'm also on the board of directors of the newly organized Northwest Chapter of American Society of Sanitary Engineers. Now, I'm not here today testifying on behalf of the City of Portland. City of Portland is neutral on this issue, but I am here testifying as a plumbing inspector, and in that case, I'm representing the local chapter of IAPMO and also ASSE. And as Mr. Endicott said, this is a very important issue as far as code enforcement goes. I've been a plumbing inspector for almost 19 years, and a major part of the plumbing inspector's job, as well as the electrical inspector's job, is to verify licensing. To install plumbing in the state of Oregon, unless it's on a homeowner's own property, you are required to be a licensed journeyman plumber or a registered Oregon apprentice. And everybody does carry, supposedly, the license. In fact, we just recently changed the Oregon administrative rules for plumbing to require the journeyman to have the license on their person and to show that to the inspector or the code compliance person when asked. This would just help us simplify that process. This is not my journeyman's license. I have one on my wallet, but it's fairly close to this. This is my city ID, and as Mr. Endicott said, we carry these. They've just got a Velcro breakaway in the back, and as a city inspector, we are required to wear these so that we are visibly recognized when we're on the job. And I think that this would really help the inspectors out there, as well as the homeowners and the building owners and the contractors in general. Like I say, it levels the playing field there. On the plumbing board, we have on the average of between 100 and 150 cases a year for code compliance, and probably better than 50%, if not more than that, are licensing issues. So I think this would really help in that process. And really, there isn't any physical impact. With our license, you could carry it in a little plastic pouch like this. You could punch a hole in the top. That little clip could go into that then. And they're plasticized, so they're fairly indestructible. If one is lost, they can be replaced. And I just think it would be a fairly inexpensive way to help the industry do what it needs to do as far as, like you said, sir, is police itself. And so I think it would be good for the industry, and I think it would be good for the citizens of the state of Oregon.
Same card.
What would happen if someone didn't, if we passed this and someone didn't wear the identification?
Well, as an inspector, if we're out on the job now, we ask to see it. It would just make it easier if they did have it visibly shown on their person. We're still going to ask. And, you know, we're not going to cite a person just because he has in his wallet, he doesn't have it on his shirt or on his jacket. But the plumbers will be aware that, like now, they're supposed to be carrying it on their person in their wallet. But you can ask, probably 25% of the plumbers out there, and they may not have it on their person. It's in the truck. They don't want to get it wet. They don't carry their wallet with them. It's in their wallet. And I could see that. I've worked with the tools for 15 years before I became an inspector. And there's times when you may be in a situation where you don't want to have your wallet on your person. And since these are a plasticized card, it's really easy just then to clip that on your shirt or with the lanyard put it around your neck. And they're fairly impervious to any type of problem where it could damage your wallet. But like I say, I don't think I would write somebody up for a code violation or a code compliance issue just because they didn't have it visible. But we could warn them, and I think they would probably have it on the next time.
Thank you.
I want to ask the same question I asked of Mr. Endicott, mm-hmm. my brother-in-law. He's a welder. He's going to have that thing around his neck when he's welding. So if they stick it inside their shirt or something, that's not going to be a violation.
I don't think that's a problem, no.
Okay. Because I'm sure I'm going to hear about this one.
Yeah. Well, as Mr. Endicott said, I think a lot of it gets back to helping the citizens as well. And as Mr. Kitt said, I believe that if the citizens aren't aware of it, you know, they're probably not going to ask for it. But if when the plumber shows up at the door to do a service call or the electrician shows up to the door to do a service call, and he has that visible, I think it would just ease their mind. And if there were some way that this could be publicized as a, you know, a general, you know, just something that whether the Oregonian would do it or the Willamette Week, just as a general informational article about the licensing issue and for consumer protection, you can see it and ask for it, which they should do now, but like you say, usually they don't even know that. But the state of Oregon has required plumbers to be licensed for over 50 years, and it is an important issue, and I think this would just help.
Representative Kitts.
I guess I'm concerned on two fronts. Number one is if your industry requires it, where do we draw the line? Are we going to have to, every landscape maintenance person, every landscape contractor out there going to be wearing these lanyards out there? And number two, if the motive there is to cut down on fraud for the consumer, I mean, any number of places, Salem Indoor Soccer Center, a half mile up the road here, for example, I can go there and have anything created, digitally photo, and anything written on any card that I want. Is that really going to, I mean, I just don't see this as being the means to the end of your problem.
Well, I think it'll help. As a plumber, I've had my journeyman's license since 1976, and I'm proud of it. As an inspector, I don't need to maintain that. I don't work with the tools on a daily basis. But every 2 years, I buy my license. I even buy one in the state of Washington. I haven't used that one in over 20 years. And I don't think it's really an issue. I don't think the plumbers that have this license or the card will have a problem with you know, showing it. And I think it would just help in that there are people out there that are doing work as a plumber and they're not licensed to do that. And that is something that the state needs to take care of, and I think this will help it. And we as local jurisdictions police that for the state. The state has code compliance officers, but they can't cover every jurisdiction. So all of my plumbing inspectors, we do check licenses, and this would just make that simpler. It's just part of our job.
Follow-up.
And I would like to touch on what Representative Garrard said earlier as far as in your response. He said, what would you do if someone were not in compliance? And you said that you probably wouldn't cite them for a violation. I would just like to point out that you said probably, number one, and that's just you. So I would just hate to rack up a bunch of citations to people out there that are just simply trying to do their job.
In a normal instance, we do a warning process. I have 9 plumbing inspectors that work for me. And before anything goes to the state level for a code compliance issue, it goes through me. And I think most of the jurisdictions probably work the same way. And sure, I've got 9 different people that work for me. You've got 9 different personalities out there. You try and come up with consistency, but when you're dealing with individuals, that's 100% consistency is impossible. But I don't think there would be a problem with somebody being leaned on too harshly over this.
Okay. Madam Chair. Representative Gallegos.
Yeah, clearly we've talked a little bit. There's the higher likelihood of the getting wet, damaged, lost. What's the cost of a replacement for a plumber who, you know, might lose or damage his badge frequently?
I don't know. I think Mark Long is here. Maybe he could answer that. I don't think it's that expensive.
Is it a cumbersome process?
I lost my wallet 3 years ago. And, I attend the Oregon State Plumbing Boards, which meet every 2 months. And while I was down there, I had another one made, and they did it basically while I waited. I think it may be, if you did it by mail, it may take a week or so, maybe 2 weeks. But it's the same as, you know, losing it in any other way. I'm sure that it may be a little more susceptible if it's exposed, but I've carried this same one. Like I say, this is my city ID, and I wear it every day. And let's see, we've required to have these on our person for about the last 6 or 7 years, and I haven't lost one yet.
Well, the average plumber, though, who's out on the job might not have the convenience of being, you know, like you were in that situation. You were
conveniently located to where you could go replace
right.
your badge. You mentioned that there's a mail process to where they could request a new copy by mail.
Mm-hmm.
Could a plumber then be cited for not having their badge if they've lost it?
Well, we were discussing that with Mark earlier today, and I don't know what the procedure is right now. Like I say, when I lost my wallet, I don't recall. That was quite a while ago. It took a short length of time when I had it done, but this was probably 20 years ago. I was on a job site, and I dropped my wallet into a septic system. That was irretrievable. And at the time, I didn't have the convenience of going to Salem on a fairly regular basis. So I did call Building Codes Division, and it was taken care of within a couple of weeks. And I have to admit, I don't think within that two-week period I was approached by a plumbing inspector. But we were discussing that just now also with Mark, that with the fax systems that are available, whether it's a personal fax to your home or for your office or the company they work for, BCD could probably send them, an 8.5 by 11 memo or something that has their name, their address, their journeyman's license, or their apprenticeship registration number on it, and that would work as a temporary license.
Representative Shoffler.
It's more of a comment. I think it's more of a comment than anything. Representative Hansen is a plumber. Mm-hmm. He's the one that brought this to us. And if we were forcing folks to wear something, then I might have some reservations. If I said to Mr. Glad, all carpenters got to wear, this badge, I don't know what he would feel about that if we were going to make him do that. But the plumbers are coming here asking for this. So I don't see how it's... I mean, if you guys want it, if you guys want to do that and police your industry that way, and I've seen a few industry policing bills come by here. It isn't like government, in my opinion, it isn't like government's forcing anybody to do anything. It's an industry coming here and requesting something be done. So it's going to make your job better. And I do know this much, too, and then I'll be quiet, but on some of these big job sites, there may be some fella that may be in a hurry and may want some pipe moved for whatever reason. And I know one thing, the last thing we want is somebody that's not qualified taking a wrench and loosening up a pipe. Now, that I don't think these badges are going to stop that, but if it's going to help you guys do your jobs and do it better and more efficiently and effectively and safer, and you want it, I don't see why I would ever be against it. So that's my two bits.
Thank you.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, this seems like a reasonable proposal, but I guess the larger concern is if there really is an increasing problem with unlicensed people doing this work, what other steps are being taken to crack down on that?
The state is working on coming up with new rules and regulations for code compliance. And so that is helping a lot, but it's always been an issue over, of course, I'm with the plumbing end of this thing, with people doing work without a license. And like I say, until somebody sees that person or you confront that person in the field, you're not going to know about it. And this would just make it a little bit easier, because as an inspector, I'm the person that's going to be out there finding a non-licensed person. And if they have this visible, it just makes my job easier.
Follow up. And if there is this sort of public awareness campaign that goes along with mm-hmm. requiring that people wear their ID, do you think that if a consumer calls and says that they believe they had somebody who may not be licensed, can action be taken as
yes,
a result
it can.
Of that?
Yes. Yeah, we don't have to be a witness. If we have, a bill of sale, a receipt, and can track back through that that way. We do that a lot with work that may be through a registered contractor, but for some reason a permit wasn't taken out. So maybe your journeyman plumber was there, but they did the work without a required permit. And it works the same way.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. And I will call Sean Miller forward.
Thank you.
morning again.
Good morning. It's me again. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I represent the Associated Builders and Contractors and the Independent Electrical Contractors of Oregon. We don't have a formal position on House Bill 2447. However, we wanted to talk about some of the policy issues, actually some of the questions that you have all raised, actually, in the previous testimony. And I understand that this bill will probably go to some form of work group. I think there's some confusion on how the bill is drafted and then how some of the testimony on dealing with the license versus the ID badge. The two issues, obviously, that this bill is to address, and I appreciate Mr. Endicott bringing this bill for discussion, and is the two issues are compliance and security. And the particular bill as drafted places a new item, which is identification badge, as opposed to your license, which is in your wallet. And so, you know, as you all are aware, and the bill does apply to all the licensed trades, so electricians, plumbers, and everybody who's licensed by the Building Codes Division, you're issued a license from the Building Codes Division. That is, in turn, it's a official state document. It's in your wallet. And that is the authority, that is giving that individual the authority to do that particular work on the job site. The bill, as printed, does create a new badge, something that is, you know, you have to wear on the job site as opposed to your license. And from a compliance standpoint, we're a little worried, I want to preface that the bill also states that it's the Building Codes Division to issue the badge. And so that's something I think is probably the correct way to do it. If you're going to do anything, it should be issued by the division as an official document. I know there's been some amendments that allow the contractor, because of a potential fiscal impact, the contractor, whether there's a template and then they go out and print these things for their employees, and we're a little worried on that particular concept and compliance that it could actually lead to less compliance. And I think we're worried that if the building official walks onto a job site and sees an ID badge, which is not an official document from the state of Oregon, such as the license that's in your back pocket, that they can say, okay, they're okay, when in fact you don't know if they're okay unless you actually see the license. And so we're worried that this could have an adverse effect on better compliance, which I know the goal is to make compliance better, which we're supportive. And so, again, there's just these issues that we'd like to work with Mr. Endicott on in a final solution to the bill. The other issue, again, dealing with the license versus a new ID badge, I know, you know, and I know this is a specific example. In the state of Oregon, we're giving a fishing license or a hunting license. That's something you can put in your pocket. And I enjoy to fish. I enjoy fishing. And I know when I go down to the Klamath River in Northern California, which I like to go steelhead fishing, I have to buy a state of California license. And that particular license, it's the license that has to be visible. So you actually have to put it in a, you know, if a fish and wildlife, a game warden comes up to you, they need to be able to look at you and see, okay, you are legal to fish on this river, as opposed to Oregon's law where you can have it in your pocket and they have to check it. But again, that's something that's issued by the state. And so I want to distinguish the difference between the license versus the ID badge, because I think, you know, if we were to look at this particular issue, if you have your license that's visible, then obviously that's the official document that's giving you the authority to do that work. And that's just something I think we're willing to work with Mr. Endicott and the Building Codes Division in coming up with some form of solution. The other issue is security. This issue only deals with the licensed trades. And so on a job site, there's many other workers that are unlicensed trades, carpenters, laborers, other folks that don't have a license from the Building Codes Division. And, you know, we talked about in some instances, and I know from 9/11, you know, security has definitely changed in this environment. You all are wearing name badges. I think the only people that aren't wearing name badges are the lobbyists, but maybe they should be. But, again, it's one of the issues that in security, if you're on a job site, and this only applies to, unless the owner's requiring it, on a particular job site, if it's only the licensed trades and not the unlicensed trades, then it could have a it could be more confusing on a security standpoint of who actually is allowed on the job site and who isn't. And so in that respect, it's something that, you know, should be discussed. If it is a security issue that we're trying to get at here, should it be all or nothing? And how do we work that out? And those are just two issues that I see. I think we can work through those. But again, I just wanted to raise those policy issues because I know some of the questions were asked up to the previous folks. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer. Thank you.
Representative Kitts?
With these lobbyists badges that you speak of, would it be possible to have ratings on those badges?
Madam Chair, yes. Representative Kitts, they should be big red badges, I think. Do not. But good question.
Sean, I appreciate. In all seriousness, I appreciate your willingness to accept my joke. With regard to, so you're addressing the idea of, number one, an identification badge and a license. So those are your two, and you want to make sure that what is shown is actually a license, or to help clarify what the person's able to do and not.
Madam Chair, Representative Kitts, I think that's a discussion we have to discuss because, again, the license is what gives you the authority to do the work, not the badge.
Right.
And so if you have a badge on that says you're allowed to do, journeyman electrical work, that's really not your authority to do that work. If a building official goes on the job site and they ask, you know, I need to see your license, we're worried on from a compliance standpoint with that they might say, okay, you got your badge, great. We wanted to make sure that they check their license, and that's the official document that says I can do that. So I think it's just a discussion how, you know, if it's not an official document from the state, there might be a question: is it even legal to, let's say, cite somebody if a contractor prints it off? Even though they do have a license, can you say? And so I think it's just a question we need to discuss.
Would you support a dual lanyard?
Representative Kitts, please do not harass the witnesses. Any questions for Sean? Thank you so much. I'd like to call Mark Long. Morning.
Morning. Morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Long, Administrator, Building Codes Division. I just have a couple thoughts for you. One, we obviously understand that building codes and enforcement is important to our industry, and we appreciate the proactive efforts of the industry to try to get their arms around it. You've heard today several or discussed several different concerns, and I'm here to offer, if the committee so desires, I'd be happy to get a work group together, get the various parties who are interested in this concept, and really try to hammer out the compliance question. You know, what do you do if they don't have it, the license, it falls off? How do you address that? Who's impacted? What industry should be involved? Who all should be required to carry this identification? Any changes that might come to Building Codes Division as far as a fiscal impact or change in operations, depending on what we come up with. Security of the card, what type of card, who issues it, replacement costs and the timing of the replacement, and then any of the confusion that we might have with the way the current bill is drafted. So that concludes my statements. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mark. Representative Schaffler.
It's more a comment than anything. Now we're talking about spending money on this, and I would like to see just the plumbers come back and make everybody happy. That's what I'd rather see, and let the plumbers spend their money. That's what I'm more interested in. I don't want us spending any money.
Mr. Long, how much do you think this would cost your department to implement? I mean, would this require extra staff?
Madam Chair, it's currently written. It's unclear to us because of the exact questions you've brought forward. We've had those. If we had to issue two different types, an identification versus the current license, that probably would be a cost right there. What it would be, I don't know. And then the replacement, the timing of it, if I'm faxing back and forth and kind of changing our operations, what's the impact? And I think there's some ideas that if we get these folks together, we can kind of come around that. And my goal is to bring something back to you that would have a zero impact to the Building Codes Division, or if it did, at least identify that specifically.
Good.
Okay.
Other questions? Thank you so much. Amanda Rich.
Good morning, Chair Close, members of the committee. My name is Amanda Rich, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Association of Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors. And I'd like to just state for the record that we are supportive of the concept of this bill, but do have concerns about implementation. And we actually we like the idea of getting together a work group to work out some of these implementation issues that you've heard. I don't want to be too repetitive of what you've heard this morning, but we do have concerns. I guess I should say our major concern is keeping people working. And we don't want to see a situation where you've got a guy or a gal crawling under the house trying to get some pipe work done, loses their badge, and then can't work for 2 weeks while they're trying to get that replaced. And I think that is just our major concern that we would like to see worked out in this work group to make sure that we're not having onerous compliance and that we can keep folks working whether they've lost their badge or not. And so that's just for the record, that's our concerns, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if I could.
Okay. Thank you so much. So you would be willing to be part of the work group as well?
Absolutely. We would like to be part of that work group.
Okay. Thank you so much. Committee, I think that's a good idea. I think this bill has a lot of promise, and I'd like the people who testified today, if they could, get together on the bill and come up with some agreement on how this could be done inexpensively for the benefit of all and for the consumer and the worker. We would appreciate that. So, Mark, I will put that in your hand. Since you made that request. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2447, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2564 and have the staff read the summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2564 allows a person holding two or more licenses, certificates, or other authorizations to act as a contractor, business owner, and trades regulated under this building code to replace that with a single license. And this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Committee, this is you will hear some similar testimony on this bill. This is also by Representative Hansen. And I'll call forward Ron Murray of Local 290. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name for the record is Ron Murray, and I represent the United Association of Plumbers and Steam Fitters Local 290. And the concept behind House Bill 2564 is based upon regulatory streamlining. And first, I'm kind of draw an anecdotal situation here and kind of explain what we have right now in building trades. If you are a contractor and you are a licensed contractor, for example, as a plumbing contractor, you have to have a contractor's license with the state of Oregon in the Building Codes Division, very specific to the plumbing trade. And if you are a contractor and you do pressure vessel work or work on boilers as a contractor in the state of Oregon, you must also have a contractor's license with the Building Code Division, and so forth and so on. If you do mechanical work, you have to have a mechanical contractor's license, and if you do electric work, you have to do an electrical contractor's license. And there are many contractors where the work overlaps. For example, if you are installing a residential heat pump, you'd have to be licensed to install the HVAC heat pump, but you'd have to have an electrical license because you're also going to hook it up and so forth and so on. One of the problems that the contractors face is the licensing periods don't coincide with each other, and the licensing cycles are different. One may be 1 year long, 2 years long, 3 years long, 4 years long, so forth and so on. And so the contractors have a concern that it isn't a monetary concern. It's that what happens if that bill comes in the mail, for example, for my limited electrical license, and the bookkeeper misses it? Well, then the contractor or the individual doing the work could actually be cited for noncompliance because they didn't have that particular license. So the intent of this bill was that contractors could actually just have a form that they would check off once a year, and they could check off however many boxes they wanted to be licensed under and send one check in. It would reduce the paperwork for them tremendously. We believe that it actually would reduce the workload at Building Codes Division, because the contractors that work in multiple disciplines would actually be able to lump together their licensing requirements. Keeping in mind that none of the requirements would change, you would still have to meet the same criteria and so forth and so on. It's just that the license periods would coincide with each other and they could write one check to Building Code Division. With that being said, the way the bill came out, it has a few other nuances in it that I don't think were intended, and most of the parties that this bill is going to affect, I think, would like to go forward with the work group and kind of clean that up and get back to the original intent, and that was to allow Building Code Division to issue one license with different categories in it if a contractor so choose to take that option. And that's all this would be an option for the contractor to send one check in for multiple disciplines. It's actually an industry bill. It's not a union bill or a non-union bill or so forth and so on. It's basically labor and the contractors and industry working together just to try to simplify the building process in Oregon. So with that, I could answer any questions.
Thank you, Ron. I like the idea of doing this, having the single license. I did have a question about one part of the bill. It's in Section 1, Subsection 2. It's down in line 2526. It talks about allowing the person to file a lien under this license or maintain a suit or action for compensation for work performed within the scope of the license. Is that current law?
Madam Chair, that really was an unintended addition to this bill, and in the amendment it would not be included. And also, for example, I think the building officials will be exempted under the amendment and would not be required. And although I think we see all of the crafts that are licensed, I think it's good business to have them included. I think if one particular section of industry wanted excluded, we would probably allow that option. But I do think it's good for all of us if we're kind of all in it, as the crafts are concerned.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ken Carlson.
Good morning. This follows through as well as being a member of the plumbing board. It would just help the contractors, as Ron said, streamline their accounting systems with ECD. You've got plumbing contractors that do plumbing work and mechanical work. In some cases, they also, because of the type of installation, may have electrical as well. And it's not an issue where it would deal with the journeyman in the field, but it would help the contractors with their end of it. So I would hope that you would accept our recommendations for this and carry on with the bill.
Questions? Thank you. Amanda Rich.
Good morning again, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Amanda Rich, and I represent the Oregon Association of Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors. We are here in support of this bill. Our goal is to see one application, so one form, one renewal date, one check. And our goal, again, is to streamline efforts both on both sides of the application here, both for the contractor and for the division. And our hope is that by working with the division to work out some of the unintended consequences that you've heard about this morning, that we can make this, like I said, a time-saving and money-saving effort for both the division and for contractors. So we are in support of this bill and look forward to working with the division to work out some of the kinks. So.
Questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
John Killen.
Good
Morning, John.
Morning. Good morning, Chair Close and committee members. For the record, my name is John Killen. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Associated Builders and Contractors here in Oregon. I'm here today also in support of House Bill 2564. Many of our members are licensed in multiple trades, and as you've heard, that tends to lead to a pocket full of licenses and a file full of paperwork. The goal is to simply consolidate and simplify. And we think with a little work group and some work with Building Codes Division, we can get to that point. So unless there's any questions, ask for that opportunity.
Questions for John? Well, it's good to see that that you're all in agreement on this.
Yes.
Makes our job easier. So thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, that concludes the witnesses on House Bill 2564. We do not have a work session on a committee. We probably could have, but we will need to bring it back. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2564 with the intention of bringing that back shortly. Okay, our last item of business is possible committee measure introduction. We have four LC drafts.
Do any of these require lanyards?
There are no lanyards in these bills that I know of. because I don't like them. I hope you've had a chance to look over them, committee. These are many of these are courtesies to different groups that have met with me. We may or may not work these bills, but we would be introducing them as committee bills. Representative Gallegos.
Madam Chair, I move LC 1809, 1880, 1880-1, and 1881 be introduced as committee bills.
Representative Gallegos has moved LC draft 1881, 1880, 1880-1, and 1809 to be introduced as committee bills. Is there discussion?
Yeah.
Representative Schaffler.
I don't want to really vote to make these all the bullet points. I'd rather separate them, if we could, Madam Chair. Because I have some serious reservations about these. These three that have to do with apprenticeships. And in fact, I have some very serious reservations about these. So this one I don't have any trouble with. That's what I'd like to say.
Okay. We could do them separately. I want to make clear, though, that you would still have a chance to ask questions on these. You don't have to vote for them, and they might not ever get a hearing.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Gallegos, do you want to amend or change your withdraw your motion and make a motion to do these individually?
Yes, Madam Chair. Happy to do that.
Okay. So Representative Gallegos has withdrawn her motion. And we will now go to the first draft. We can start with 1809.
Go ahead, Mary.
Madam Chair, I move to LC 1809 be introduced as committee bills.
Okay. Representative Gallegos has moved LC draft 1809 to be introduced as a committee bill. Is there discussion? Is there objection? None so ordered.
Madam Chair, I move LC 1880 to be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Gallegos moves LC draft 1880 to be introduced as a committee bill. Is there discussion? Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, I will definitely be in opposition of this, as far as I'm concerned. As we could have lumped all three of these together. I see this as weakening our high standards of apprenticeship here in the state of Oregon. And I will definitely be in opposition of all three of these.
Okay. Other discussion? Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Schaffler, could you, knowing that all of our views, pro and con, can be expressed at the time that these bills are debated, if they're debated before the committee, are you comfortable with the relatively benign situation of introducing them as committee bills, or do you wish? Are you you feel that they're egregious enough you want to oppose them at this point in time, even as introduction as committee bills? Just trying to clarify the...
I don't know why I'd want to introduce them if I'm so vehemently opposed to them, unless, of course, I'm ignorant of something. So, go right ahead.
I would just say, Representative, that I'd be interested in other views, but I'm comfortable doing this simply as a courtesy, where our expression of support of introducing these is really not any comment on support of the bill at all. In fact, comments are flagging the concerns expressed about the bill. If that would be comfortable.
Absolutely.
Typically what happens is you've seen bills that have any controversy at all go into work groups, and they receive a lot of work trying to bring people together.
Mm-hmm.
Typically we don't move things that there's a great deal of opposition to. But I do want you to feel free to vote against these, since you do feel strong.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We have introduced LC Draft 1880. We have made a motion to introduce LC Draft 1880 as a committee bill. Is there further discussion? Okay. Seeing none, is there... do we need to hold on this?
No, okay.
All right. Is there objection? Noting Representative Schaffler's objection. Any others? Okay. Seeing none, so ordered.
And Madam Chair, I'd move LC 1880-1 and 1881 as to be introduced as committee bills.
Representative Gallegos has moved LC Draft 1880-1 and 1881 to be introduced as committee bills. Discussion. And those opposed, Representative Schaffler is noted. Others? Okay. None so ordered. All right. Thank you very much, committee. We had a great work day today, and we will see you back here on Wednesday. We are adjourned.